This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier for all your unwanted smells from pets, cooking, damp basements, smoke, whatever. You need the Thunderstorm. Buy the 3-pack now and use a couple for yourself and then maybe give one as a Christmas gift. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code word Howie3. Shipping is free.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, The Spectator, and The Daily Mail.
You got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, the millennial with the mic, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Grace Curley Show. Happy Monday, and thank you all so much for tuning in today on this dreary Monday afternoon. Hope we can bring a little sunshine to your afternoon drive. And joining us now, I'm very excited about this, is Ari Hoffman. You know him well. He's been on the show several times. He writes for the Post Millennial, and he has a ton of articles out right now about Joe Biden's 60 Minutes interview last night. So it aired last night. It was recorded on Thursday. Ari, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Always a pleasure, Grace.
Now, Ari, before I let you take the mic and let us know what you think of this disaster of an interview, I have not played the two sound cuts we have here where Joe Biden is discussing the United States' policy on Taiwan. And I want to play these and then we're going to have you react. So let's first play cut 14, please.
What should Chinese President Xi know about your commitment to Taiwan?
We agree with what we signed on to a long time ago. And that there's a one China policy, and Taiwan makes their own judgments about their independence. We are not moving, we're not encouraging their being independent. We're not, that's their decision.
But would U.S. forces defend the island?
Yes, if in fact there was an unprecedented attack.
And this is where it gets a little tricky for Joe Biden, because Scott Pelley pressed even further. This is cut 15.
After our interview, a White House official told us U.S. policy has not changed. Officially, the U.S. will not say whether American forces would defend Taiwan. But the commander-in-chief had a view of his own.
So unlike Ukraine, to be clear, sir, U.S. forces, U.S. men and women, would defend Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion?
Yes.
Now, Ari, this is not Joe Biden's first time discussing this and kind of setting the White House into a tailspin. But what did you make of his comments last night on 60 Minutes?
Well, I think he's being him. At least he seems somewhat cognizant of being in the room at the time and answering questions. He started getting very nervous at points. You can see him fidgeting. But this is what happens every single time. He says something, whether or not he's aware of it or not, and then the White House comes and walks it back. Don't forget, in the spring, Biden said that the U.S. would militarily defend Taiwan if there was some kind of Chinese incursion onto the island. The White House walked that back. Then after Nancy Pelosi's visit, there was a whole other round of this. And then after the State Department announced a $1.1 billion sale of military equipment to Taiwan earlier this month, the White House was again forced to clarify it. And they said, oh, well, that's not really what we're doing. You know, it's more a peaceful thing, blah, blah, blah. This is what happens time and time again. Now, if you were president of the United States, Grace, number one, I think we'd be better off. But number two, if they're constantly correcting you, wouldn't you start firing some people and say, no, I'm the president and this is the way it goes? Why are you constantly correcting me? The fact that Joe Biden hasn't fired anybody, the fact that they keep correcting him shows somebody else is really pulling the strings here, and the dude just isn't aware of what's going on.
Yeah, and it also just shows how dangerous it is to have someone in a position of power like this, the leader of the free world, who really is not syncing up with his administration as far as what they want to get done. I mean, I know that some of us might look at this and say, well, who really watches 60 Minutes? But the truth is that when the president makes remarks about Taiwan, or he makes remarks about Ukraine, or he makes remarks about Russia, other places are listening. And that's kind of a scary concept, Ari.
Well, look what happened with Ukraine. I mean, you're looking at Russia saw what happened in Afghanistan, and they said, we can do whatever they want. China saw what happened in Afghanistan, and they said, we can do whatever we want. Of course they're watching. They're seeing what's happening in the U.S. They're seeing that nobody's really running the show, or best case scenario, this is Obama's third term in office, and they ran all over him as well. I mean, just remember Obama promising that he would have more flexibility after the election. You're looking at those policies in action again. The Middle East is on fire again. You're having problems all across the globe, and it's because they see no leadership coming from the U.S., and they know they can get whatever they want out of this administration.
Absolutely. Another part of this interview, speaking with Ari Hoffman from the Post-Millennial, that you wrote about, Ari, was his comments, the president's comments about inflation. And I do want to play this because I couldn't believe how, and this is something I see with everyone in this administration, you figure that there's at least three topics they're going to be able to nail because they have the media in their back pocket. They're not going to get hard questions. And also, it's very obvious to anyone who's paying attention what three questions they're going to get. They're usually, if the reporter has even, you know, a modicum of common sense, would ask about inflation, would ask about the border, and would ask about the midterms. And even so, even knowing this going in, they always seem to bungle the questions that you'd expect they'd be prepared for. Now, this happened again. He got very testy with Scott Pelley when asked about inflation. Can I play cut two, please, Jared?
Mr. President, as you know, last Tuesday, the annual inflation rate came in at 8.3%. The stock market nosedived. People are shocked by their grocery bills. What can you do better and faster?
Well, first of all, let's put this in perspective. Inflation rate month to month was just an inch, hardly at all.
You're not arguing that 8.3 is good news.
No, I'm not saying it is good news, but it was 8.2 or 8.2 before. I mean, it's not, you're acting to make it sound like all of a sudden, my God, it went to 8.2%.
It's the highest inflation rate, Mr. President, in 40 years.
I got that. But guess what we are? We're in a position where for the last several months, it hasn't spiked. It is just barely, it's been basically even.
Ari, I know you wrote this up for the Post-Millennial and you kind of broke down the back and forth, but you didn't add too much in about how you felt about that interaction. What did that tell you about Joe Biden and also how this country is dealing with inflation?
Well, the problem is sometimes you have to write just the facts and you can't editorialize.
Yeah, I know.
I really want to tear this guy apart, but I can't. So this is the same guy who last month said there was zero inflation. Meanwhile, you had 8.2%. I mean, we were at, what, 1.2 when Trump was in office, and now we're up to 8.3%? He obviously doesn't understand how inflation works, and Karine Jean-Pierre, who's his mouthpiece, doesn't understand how inflation works because they keep coming out there and saying, oh, there's no increases. It's still sky high. Look what people are paying at the grocery store. I'm having a heart attack. I got the Jewish holidays coming up where I got Thanksgiving three or four times a week. And yet I got to pay these ridiculous grocery bills for all the family I got coming over. People are looking at how much it costs to fill up their cars. And they're saying, oh, gas prices are coming down. So we should thank you for setting our house on fire because you brought a little bit of water to pour on the flame. Thanks so much. They don't understand how this works at all. They have no concept of it. And what's the solution they keep saying all the time? Well, if you just switch over to electrical vehicles, then all of a sudden you'll save some money. And yet anybody knows that there are certain things that are certain in life, death and taxes. Right now they're making a ton of money off the gas tax. And here in Washington State, our utility rates are starting to go up because of how much electricity people are using. And you're starting to see the rates on charging those electric cars at those charging stations going up as well. You think these guys are going to give up the gas tax without having something else in mind? They are going to jack those utility rates through the roof. And my bet is you'll probably be paying more down the road. That's assuming you could actually plug in if you live in California or places like that than you are right now for oil. And this is their solution to solving inflation is just destroy the entire oil-based economy, go with this electric thing, and then we all know how that's going to end.
Yeah, one other thing, Ari, and so many good points you're making, one other thing I'd love to get your take on, because you've written a lot about what's happening in Seattle, whether it be crime or, you know, the drug problems that are happening there. But another part of this that you've written about is how Seattle's been dealing with this pandemic and how vaccination mandates and other things have really put a burden on a lot of the people there. Joe Biden said last night in 60 Minutes that the pandemic is over. What do you make of that?
Well, if the pandemic's over, how come there's still vaccine mandates all over the place? The Marines very quietly rolled back their vaccine mandate. I'm waiting for the rest of the armed forces to do so. But here in Washington, felons are not being booked into jails because they don't have enough staff at the jails. And let's remember that first responders, especially those in law enforcement, were affected not just by the defund police movement and politicians who didn't support them and, in fact, demonized them, but also they were fired because of these vaccine mandates. And yet they're still in place in Washington. Governor Jay Inslee 2 weeks ago had a press conference where he said he's finally giving up his emergency powers after almost 1,000 days, but that's not going to be over until Halloween. That's a month away. It's more than a month away and right before the midterm elections. Why aren't they doing it now? We have spiking crime and they can't book felons. That's not just police officers can't book them. Bounty hunters, people who are getting these guys for bail jumping are bringing them in. And they can't book them into jails. The jails are getting emptier and emptier. Some of them have actually been turned into homeless shelters until the homeless advocate said, that's not humane, you shouldn't be putting them in there. We have nobody to run these things. We have less people working at the fire departments. There's been brownouts in the fire departments of service calls. We have less EMTs. We have less people in the healthcare sector. And yet they're treating it like, oh, we're just going to keep going with this.
Yeah, and I think that another topic of conversation, I'm speaking with Ari Hoffman, that we've gone back and forth on a lot, Ari, is liberal policies and how they have real world consequences for people in these kind of blue enclaves across the country. I would love to know your reaction to what happened in Martha's Vineyard last week. I know you've written about it for the Post-Millennial. Give us your reaction to 50 illegal aliens being sent to Martha's Vineyard by Ron DeSantis and then quickly sent back to Cape Cod after only 44 hours on the island.
One of the funniest things that I have seen happening locally, and I've said this on my show as well, is that I really hope that Ron DeSantis or Governor Greg Abbott are listening right now, and they send a whole bunch of those illegal migrants here to Seattle. Because the exact same thing would happen. I mean, you're talking a place that doesn't want to deal with any of these issues, so what they started doing is spreading their homeless problem all over the rest of the county. They started exporting it to the rest of the state. And this just showcased the liberal hypocrisy, how they all have these lawn signs that say, no human being is illegal, and we support immigrants, and we support illegal immigrants, and we support refugees. And the second they actually show up, they are cheering as the buses take them to a military base on Cape Cod out of their town. You're talking about the Obamas. They don't have any girls at home. I think their daughters are both in college or if not past college. They're empty nesters. They got their $14 million house with tons of acreage. You probably could have housed all of them on their property. And yet you don't see them taking anybody in. No, as soon as they show up, it's ship them out of here. I was actually questioning. They had this one person who I saw interviewed who was in charge of their homeless response who says, they can't handle it. I'm thinking, how many homeless people are there really in Martha's Vineyard? But they can't. They have a homeless problem in Martha's Vineyard. Aren't these the liberals who tell us they're going to solve every problem whatsoever? Why aren't they taking those people in? Because it's all about virtue signaling. They want to project their virtuousness, for lack of a better word, onto all these people they see as their peasants, as their disciples, as their peons, rather than actually deal with it themselves so they can feel good about themselves. And that video of them cheering as the illegals were leaving was just nauseating.
It really was. Ari Hoffman, I love having you on. You can cover so many issues, and he is one of the hardest working men in this business. I get, even saying that word now, I get nervous because I should be calling him the hardest working birthing person. You can tell I get tongue tied. Ari, give everyone your Twitter and tell them where they can find you.
Absolutely. You can find me over at The Hoffather on Twitter, Ari Hoffman Official on Facebook and Instagram until I get censored and banned. And you can also find all my writing over at The Post-Millennial and over at KVI.com.
Until he gets censored and banned. And that could be any day now, as I always say. We'll be right back with more of your calls. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. She's got the voice of an angel.
I've been called the songbird of my generation, of people who've heard me.
It's Grace Curley.
We have plenty to get to in this last 45 minutes, and I do want to go over Joe Biden's claim that the pandemic is over, because even though we talked about some of the lingering side effects of this pandemic, including masks and, you know, mitigation efforts and contact tracing and all that stuff, I also want to talk about how Joe Biden undercut his message about having to cancel student loan debt. And Red State pointed this out. Charles Cook pointed this out in the National Review. I'm going to read a little bit from that in the next segment, because I don't understand how you can argue on one hand that we need to cancel student loan debt because the pandemic is still going on. We can, you know, invoke these emergency orders. And then at the same time, say with a straight face that the pandemic is over. Both of those things can't exist at the same time. But this is what Joe Biden does. He speaks out of both sides of his mouth, and no one calls him on it, including Scott Pelley. I'm shocked. But before we get to any of that, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention what I think is one of the more cringeworthy things I've seen in a long time. And I used to watch the videos that the White House would put out about Joe Biden's cat. So I have a pretty high threshold for cringe. Justin Trudeau was at a hotel, a bar. It looked like a hotel.
It looked like a hotel bar lobby type thing.
And there was a piano. And it looked like one of those pianos that you don't actually use. You know, it's just there for decoration. Until Trudeau showed up. And then they decided to give it a spin. And he decided to sing Bohemian Rhapsody. And let's take a listen. Oh, they didn't even show the part where it gets really high, you know, the hard notes to hit. He is all grandstanding. He is like Canada's AOC. Does he do anything besides put on a show 24/7? It's embarrassing.
Honestly, she is the worst. She is the worst person in the world. She's the worst in the world.
All right, now transitioning to a different subject here, because I don't know what else I can say about that besides maybe we don't do that. Maybe if you're the prime minister, maybe you can just not sing at the hotel piano. I know it's hard. Trust me. Trust me, Justin. Do you know how hard it is for me to resist getting up and singing when I have a microphone in front of my face? In fact, I give in quite a bit. But I think you have enough on your plate. We don't need to hear your singing voice. This is not American Idol.
I am sure it's what the Queen would have wanted.
Yeah, because, you know, the Queen was stoic and she always kept her wits about her. And Justin Trudeau singing at a piano in front of a bunch of strangers is really what she would have wanted. On a side note, though, there we were just talking to Ari Hoffman from the Post-Millennial. If you missed it, definitely go back and listen to that podcast interview. It'll be up in the next hour. It was a really, really great interview with Ari, I think. And he was talking about the homeless problem in Seattle. And this problem it's taking over a lot of areas. I remember listening last week to the Morning Wire, and David Marcus was on there, and he was talking about the open air drug markets in San Francisco. Well, in Denver, there's a new idea, and I'm not going to have enough time in this segment, but I will talk about it when we come back. Here's the headline from Red State. Homeless in Denver, here's $1,000 a month. So it's basically direct cash assistance that is going to help more than 140 women and families, not men, no men need apply here, but women and families, they're giving out $1,000 cash a month to homeless people. I want to talk about this when we come back. We'll also take your calls on illegal aliens and Justin Trudeau if you want to weigh in. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
I think we'll go with a little Bohemian Rhapsody, gentlemen.
Good call.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. If you missed that, Justin Trudeau was wowing the crowds at a hotel lobby with his singing the night before the Queen's funeral. You know, he never does really anything. And maybe this is on me. Maybe Justin can't win me over at this point. Because everything he does, I just think, was that necessary? Was there a groundswell that people wanted to hear that? Was everyone like, oh, was he being urged to sing Bohemian Rhapsody?
You got to be pretty cringe when the worst thing you do isn't trampling your own citizens with horses and freezing their bank accounts.
No, compared to the time at the piano, that was nothing. Dan, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, Grace. With the influx of illegals coming over the border, I mean, I'm in the real estate field, and I deal with a lot of rentals, and the prices of apartments have gone through the roof. It's unbelievable. So that's why, you know, and I've been helping out with different candidates on both sides of the border. So as far as Massachusetts go, we got to get these people in, like Rayla Campbell, you know, Leah Cole Allen, Jeff Deal, Dean Train for U.S. Congress. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, these are all people that are against open borders. You know, we got to help fund these people.
Yeah, and then you have running against candidates who want to have a secure border, who want to have an actual process in place. You have candidates like Charlie Crist in Florida. And I saw this compilation over the weekend. I'm really glad I remembered it in this last 10 minutes here, because I think it tells you everything you need to know about Charlie Crist, which is the left assumes that the only questions they're going to get are questions where they are asked to pounce and seize and weaponize on Republicans. And they are asked to play the victim and then to demonize their opponents. They are never asked to explain their own stances, to bring forward their own solutions, or to reason with people and figure out why their take on these things is not part of the problem. In this case, Charlie Crist, much to his dismay, is asked over and over again throughout the course of this interview, not what Ron DeSantis is doing wrong, but what he would do instead. And you would think, because he's running against Ron DeSantis, and furthermore, because he's telling Ron DeSantis voters, I don't want your vote. I don't need your vote. You have hate in your heart. You would think this guy, with all the confidence, with all the ego, with all the bravado, would have a plan. Even maybe take a page out of Joe Biden's book and have a pronged plan, a three-pronged plan, a five-pronged plan. And instead, all he has is Ron DeSantis, man, bad. Let's take a listen.
DeSantis is doing this because he's protesting Biden's immigration policies. What do you make of the governor, of the president's immigration policies and the situation at the border?
Well, what I do have an opinion on is what the governor is doing and these kind of tactics, political tactics that he's utilizing.
What is the appropriate measure for that process, especially now when there are record numbers of people crossing the borders?
Well, do it in a humane fashion, Glenna. I mean, this is inhumane. This is inappropriate.
Just be, what would be the more humane and appropriate process?
Well, it would be not to lie to people, to lure them on an airplane to a place where they don't even know where they're going for a reason that they don't know why.
So if you were governor, what are specific solutions that you would propose that are completely different than these solutions that are being used currently?
Well, I wouldn't ship them around like they're animals, like they're cattle. I would not do that.
If I could do just have a follow-up question. So what would you have done with these migrants?
Well, I wouldn't have shipped him on a plane. I wouldn't have lied to him.
Right. We know what you wouldn't have done. I think we're clear, actually, on what you wouldn't have done. Anything DeSantis has done in the past, you wouldn't have done. You won't do anything that DeSantis will do in the future. We've got it, Charlie. We're crystal clear on that front. But what would you have done? And I love how he says, I would do it in a humane fashion. Do you consider Joe Biden's process humane? Because I've got a series of headlines over the last 2 years that would beg to differ about people drowning at the border, about children being dropped from the border walls, about kids being smuggled in here by coyotes, about women being raped on the trek here. And there's nothing humane about the process we currently have in place because of Joe Biden. And there's also nothing humane about incentivizing people to come here by having open borders and by talking about how wonderful your sanctuary cities are. There's nothing about that that is kind or compassionate. But talk about dodge, duck, dive, and dodge. I mean, that man didn't have one idea of his own. He's got plenty of ideas as to what DeSantis is doing wrong. But does he have any ideas about what he would do to make things right? I don't think he does. I think he's hoping he can run just off the fact that people hate Ron DeSantis. I don't know if that's going to work for him. All right. A quick follow-up on the homeless situation in Denver. This is from Red State. The Denver City Council approved a plan last week that will give up to $1,000 cash a month to homeless people for up to a year as part of a basic income program designed to help lift individuals out of homelessness. The only catch, white cisgender males need not apply. The program is designed for women, transgender, and gender nonconforming individuals and
a man and a woman.
And families in shelters. The $2 million required to finance this plan comes from federal COVID relief money allocated in the American Rescue Plan Act. More than 140 homeless people will benefit from the program, provided that they are using the shelter system. Now, and I don't want to come off callous at all. And there's so many great people in this country who do a lot of things for homeless people. And far be it from me to act like I have, you know, an idea of what's going to fix this problem, because it's clearly a problem that is affecting our entire country. Different parts of the country are dealing with it, more than other parts. But I will say this: I remember always feeling like when I would see a homeless person, and your instinct is to give them $1, $5. And sometimes people would say to me, you really shouldn't give that homeless person money. And as a kid, I remember thinking, well, that's really mean. Why not? You know, why? And then as you get older, you realize because a lot of that money is going to drugs or it's going to alcohol. It's not really going to help this person. And when I hear $1,000 cash a month to homeless people, and while I'm sure that there is exceptions to that, as there are usually in every situation, it does feel like this could become a problem where you're giving people direct cash assistance, and it's not actually going to make their situation any better. With that being said, I don't know what the answer is. At this point, you look at what's happening in San Francisco, you look at what's happening in Seattle, you look at what's happening in New York City, you look at what's happening in LA, and this is a problem beyond what I think a lot of people have any answers for, but allocating $2 million for equity cash is not my idea of what's going to make this better, let alone fix it. One other thing I want to get to before we go here is on this topic of handouts and on this topic of throwing money at something and hoping to fix a bigger problem. We should talk about the student loan cancellation, because Joe Biden, whether he thinks he did or not, he inadvertently talked about it last night on 60 Minutes. Can I have cut six, please?
Is the pandemic over?
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over. If you notice, no one's wearing masks. Everybody seems to be in pretty good shape.
Now, Charles C.W. Cook has a piece in the National Review, and he says, back in August, Biden's lawyers argued with half-straight faces that the 2003 HEROES Act, which as Bloomberg Law noted was passed not as a generalized enabling act, but to help borrowers serving in the military in the wake of the September 11th attacks, could be twisted to apply to any national emergency, including pandemics such as COVID-19. This, of course, was nonsense. Among the specific problems with Biden's argument was that the 2003 HEROES Act does not cover debt cancellation. And then later in the piece, he writes, or to put it more simply, 3 months before Biden's move on student loans, the CDC concluded that the pandemic was no longer enough of an emergency to justify extraordinary measures at the border. And so we're seeing this over and over again, that in certain situations, the Biden administration wants to say, well, COVID's still going on. COVID's still going on so we can cancel student loan debt. But COVID is not going on to the fact, to the point where we need to keep Title 42 in place. They've been fighting to get that removed for a very long time. COVID, the pandemic is over when Joe Biden wants to say it in a 60 Minutes interview, but it's not over when he wants to skip over Congress and cancel billions of dollars worth of student loan debt. And I was discussing this, I was at an event over the weekend, and I was discussing the student loan cancellation, and I said, I think this was, once again, a major miscalculation, because people who don't get anything from this, whether they make more so they don't qualify for it, or whether the real people who are going to be ticked off are the people who already paid their student loans off, they're not going to be happy. But on top of that, as I've said before, the far left progressives, they're never happy. I mean, it's like you can give a mouse a cookie. You can give them 10 grand to cancel student loans. But that's not going to be enough. They're going to want more. Do they strike you as the type to be satisfied with anything? And so I think he's managed to irritate both sides with this latest success, as Scott Pelley might call it, another win added to his winning streak. 844-500-4242. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Dr. Houghton of Perfect Smiles is a superb architect. When it comes to dentistry, he is the best at what he does. He fixes your teeth and your smile, but what he really does is he builds the self-confidence of his patients. When you have a smile that you're proud of, it builds confidence in your professional life and in your personal life. The better you look, the better you feel. That helps every aspect of your life, every interaction you have daily. If you're not afraid to smile, every other part of life becomes a lot easier. It's a new year and you have the opportunity to make 2022 the year for a new you. Have you thought about Perfect Smiles for years but never called? This year, take care of yourself. You deserve it. Call Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. They're conveniently located off of Route 3. They have plenty of parking, and you can reach them at PerfectSmiles.com. That's PerfectSmiles.com. Change your smile. Change your life. One other thing, Jared. Actually, glad I have you here because you might be able to answer this for me. There's a new poll out, and it shows that a lot of people are foregoing their trips to Disney World because of the price. And the price has always increased year to year, basically. I'm sure there were some years where it was flat, but it's not unusual for the price to increase. But lately, because of inflation, which Joe Biden tells us is no big deal, the average cost of a ticket is $137 per day. That's one park Disney World ticket. And travel company Koala has projected that Disney World tickets could cost about $253 in 9 years based off previous price increases. So it's about 7.4% of an increase each year. And a lot of families are saying, I don't think we need to do this. No thanks. My question for you is, would you're a new dad, would you take your son to Disney?
I wouldn't take him until he's older, old enough to kind of remember and appreciate it. But I don't think I could justify spending that money. As much as I would love to do the Star Wars land, and I'd love to do the Avengers land or whatever it's called. I would love to do that, but I don't think I could justify the cost of that, honestly.
You know how much a ticket cost in 1971?
How much?
$3.50.
Thanks, Jimmy Carter. Thanks, Nixon.
Well, here's the crazy part about the poll. Out of 2,000 people, 92.6% said a vacation to the resort was out of reach for average families. And you might say, well, yeah, it's absurdly expensive. But here's the part of it that I think makes this worth talking about. It's not just 2,000 regular Joes. It's 2,000 self-described Disney World enthusiasts. If you've ever met a Disney World enthusiast, I've met several. They're not... I mean, I read a story a couple weeks ago about a woman who, talking about forgoing, she got rid of, I don't know, forgoed?
Or went.
Forwent the dinner at her wedding so that Mickey and Minnie Mouse could come and they could take pictures with Mickey and Minnie Mouse. Disney World enthusiasts are on another level. So if they're even saying that it's out of reach for their families, then Mickey Mouse might be in trouble. That's not a good sign. That's a bad omen for Daffy Duck and Minnie and all the rest of the crew. Donald Duck? What did I say?
Daffy Duck. Daffy Duck is a Looney Tune. Donald Duck is Disney.
Can you tell him
Disney will sue us. I'm just saying.
Oh, will they? Can you tell I'm not a Disney World enthusiast?
I can tell.
I've been to Disney World. I enjoyed it, but I'm just, you know.
I technically worked for them at one point, so.
Yeah. 844-500-4242. We will be right back with my favorite Disney World enthusiast, Howie Carr. Don't go anywhere.
Just remember the 5 D's of dodgeball. Dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everybody, and happy Monday to all of you out there. Thank you for tuning in. It's time for the Carr crossover. Howard Lawrence Carr, looking dapper as ever in your pink elephant tie. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Grace.
Howie, you once gave me advice that Twitter is not the place where I should be hanging out all the time, and I totally agree with you. However, I do want to read you one thing that spoke to me today that I think you'll appreciate. This is from Ben Shapiro. He said, the gap between Twitter and real life is never greater than when Twitter deems it a win for Democrats that the residents of Martha's Vineyard housed illegal immigrants for 48 hours and now likely want to write themselves a musical about their hospitality.
I would say correction. It was less than 48 hours.
What are we clocking in at, 44?
I said 40 hours, and you know the guy said that's because they didn't want to pay him time and a half for overtime. But somewhere in the low 40s, not 48, though.
Well, you know, Howie, I got a lot of my terminology from you, and one of the expressions we like to use when describing people on Martha's Vineyard is beautiful people, and I got some pushback for that. But what I would like to tell people is if you identify as a beautiful person, then yes, I'm talking about you, but you can always identify as not a beautiful person, and one way to really confirm that identity is by not voting for these absurd policies.
Right. I was at a listener event with WXDK, our Cape affiliate, over the weekend, and there were hundreds of people there, including some from Martha's Vineyard, and nobody was angry at DeSantis. Even people who said, you know, yeah, we're going to get a few more plane loads, but you know what can you do? They got to do something to get the attention of the beautiful people.
It's you know what it is, Howie? We're finally playing by the left playbook of desperate times call for desperate measures.
Right.
You know, if you're screaming and banging your head against the wall and trying to get them to pay attention to what's happening at the border, and they deny it's even going on, what are they supposed to do?
I think that's actually one of Saul Alinsky's axioms, which is make them play by their own rules. And that's what this is, you know.
If it's
good for people in South Texas and Arizona, then it's good for Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket.
Howie, you have an excellent show plan for today. I've been hearing little glimpses of it from inside the studio, including I thought I heard President Trump calling in at one point.
Yeah, he did.
He left a voicemail.
He left a voicemail. He went back to Palm Beach this weekend.
I heard.
I asked him. I'm going back in a couple weeks. I asked him to, you know, get the place in order for me before I got back.
He mentioned in his Truth Social that the FBI agents didn't take off their shoes when they were going through his bedroom.
He's pretty disturbed about that.
Yeah, he's a germaphobe. I could understand. Yeah.
So he said we'll have that his message. Most people are going to get it on Truth Social. We get it on voicemail.
That's the Howie Carr effect right there. Don't miss Howie's show. It's going to be a great way to start off your week. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Don't go anywhere. It's The Grace Curley Show.